Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. Hope everybody's paying attention today because we have a guy calling in from Florida. And you might recognize him from recent years being involved with Rudy Giuliani. Mr. Donald Trump, I want to welcome Lev Parnas to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thank you for having me, John.
You know, looking back on your journey, what do you think about it now that you may not have thought of prior to this journey in the past 3 years?
Oh, that's a good question, John. I mean, there's a lot to go into there. I mean, probably the most important lesson I learned in this whole thing is, loyalty, trust, using your own common sense to be able to disseminate information instead of kind of following the rat pack type of, situation. So, that would be the most important thing that I learned from my journey about as far as life goes. But, I mean, I've learned a lot when it comes to politics, the way things were running inside the White House and so on and so on.
When you talk about the things running in the White House, what do you mean by that? Because I know things based on what the media says is a little different. What does that look like to you in your world?
Well, when you say the media says, I mean, which media, we'd have to discuss that in particular, because over the years, everything that I've come out and discussed and spoke about, I've provided receipts as far as text messages, emails, videos, pictures that's validated everything that I've said. So when I say inside the White House, let me maybe clear it up a little bit. I'm not talking about the day to day and what was going on, everything. I'm talking about what my book is based on. It's called Shadow Diplomacy, and it's based on a shadow diplomacy that Trump ran simultaneously while, having a regular diplomatic crew like, Pompeo and Bolton and ambassadors all over the countries. And simultaneously, he had his own shadow diplomacy group that was Rudy Giuliani, myself, Victoria Tunzing, Jody Genova, and John Solomon.
What's your agenda when you first put that group together?
Well, the group got put together based upon, I call it the BLT group, because we used to meet at the BLT restaurant on the second floor of the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. But it was put together by Rudy Giuliani, basically after seeing the video of Joe Biden, the infamous video where he comes out and fires the says, get the prosecutor fired, or otherwise we'll hold the $1 billion, and meeting with Yuri Lutsenko, who was then the current general prosecutor of Ukraine, interviewing over Skype that we put together, a video with Viktor Shokin, an interview that was the actual general prosecutor that got fired in this whole debacle. Giuliani basically put together, Victoria introduced me to Victoria Tunzing, which then she introduced me to John Solomon. And then basically the group got formulated, and our main goal was to get information regarding Joe Biden's and Hunter Biden's escapades in Ukraine.
So y'all were a collective group to try to find out the truth about what was going on with our current president, Biden, basically.
Yep.
So when I say media, I think the media sometimes uses different words to define people. And then that word will stick with, that person. How many people do you think have been mislabeled by those words that could be derogatory that they put in front of people's names that become their representation to the national media?
truly believe the media is very powerful when it comes to that. Going through it myself and feeling it, seeing it, and going through it, almost impossible to get out of. I was blessed to be able to get out of the media, as you call it, firestorm, where they label you different things without sometimes even validating, just because it fits into the narrative that they're running. It's almost impossible to get out of, and some people suffer for the rest of their life. I mean, I was blessed that I had actual validated receipts, as they call them, to validate my stories, because some of my stories were so outrageous. And I mean, you would never believe they were true if they didn't actually happen and we didn't have the facts to back them up. So I agree with you. I mean, the media sometimes puts labels on people without giving them a chance, and then it goes with them for the rest of their life.
So going back to this group, what was the thought process and what was the agenda, after the first meeting? I try to stay out of politics myself. I mean, I'm the type of person that I don't really believe in a two-party system, because if I'm picking a starting five at the ball field, the basketball court or whatever, I want to have the best five players. So maybe three of them are Republican, maybe two of them are a Democrat.
I agree with
And you know what I mean? And
you.
you talk to people like, Melissa DeRosa and all these people, and we talk about the behind the scenes about, I'm going to go after you, and if you come after me, I'm going to go after you. And it's a ping pong back and forth. So setting the stage for this group, obviously you're tied to a source, being from Ukraine, originally being Ukrainian. What was the approach, and what came out of that initially?
Well, it all started because of the Mueller investigation and the whole Russian collusion that was being portrayed at the time, trying to label Trump a Russian asset. And Giuliani was on a mission with his investigators in Ukraine. John Solomon was on his own mission with his own sources. Congressman Devin Nunes at the time using his own sources. And they were all like kind of doing it on their own, trying to find the basically on the principle that Ukraine was the one that was blaming. It wasn't Russia, but it was Ukrainian people in Ukraine that tried to blame Russia, stole the Democratic servers, forged the Black Ledger, Manafort's Black Ledger, and so on and so on. So that's where the basis came out. There was an infamous meeting that me and Giuliani had in the Havana. How it all started was in the Havana cigar bar in the city. Rudy Giuliani got a phone call from one of his investigators, an ex-prosecutor by the name of Bart Schwartz, that happened to have a whistleblower coming out of Ukraine, and had some letters for Congressman Lindsey Graham, and basically a lot of information that had to do with Burisma. And was the first kind of conversation about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden being brought up, because prior to that, it was more the Manafort ledger, it was more the DNC servers and stuff like that. At that meeting, partner Igor had a video that was produced to us by certain Ukrainian sources. That infamous video of Joe Biden coming out and saying, basically fire the prosecutor, otherwise we won't give you aid. That's when Giuliani basically said, "We got you." And that's when it all kind of shifted from primarily into the Hunter Biden, Burisma, and Joe Biden situation. Fast forwarded now, it's about February of 2019. I just got back from Ukraine after I had a meeting, a 3-hour meeting with then President Poroshenko on behalf of Trump and Giuliani, relaying a message to him, basically telling him from Trump, because he was going through his own elections at the time, that Trump would support him and invite him to the White House if he would to basically come out and speak about the Ambassador Maria Ivanovich at the time, and talk about how she's interfering in Ukrainian politics. More than anything, announce, not do an investigation, and that's the key here. Do announce an investigation into Joe Biden and Hunter Biden for certain criminal activities in Ukraine. After that meeting, I came back to debrief Giuliani. That's when Giuliani brought in Solomon and Victoria Tunzing, and that was the first meeting where after that debriefing, when the BLT team was formed. At that meeting, Solomon then started producing certain evidence that he had, supposedly, that needed to get verified from sources that he had in Ukraine and in the State Department and other sources. And at that point, it was agreed upon by the group that me and Igor would go to Ukraine and validate this information to make sure that it was correct, true, about what was being said about you know, Joe and Hunter Biden.
So yeah, Eastern Europeans, in my experience, are very matter-of-fact people. Kind of like if you double down on New York City a little bit, like times five or times 10, they're probably a little more, you know, hit you in the mouth type of culture. So you know what I mean? So I don't...
Well, I'm Eastern Europe. I was born in Ukraine. I was born in Ukraine. I immigrated here when I was 3 years old. So I'm fully American and grew up here.
Yeah.
But I've been back and know the culture very well. Absolutely.
What were they telling you?
Well, the interesting part is they were telling us what we wanted to hear. They were telling us that Joe Biden basically threatened Poroshenko, the president. And again, when I say they, not all the sources. We're talking about certain sources. Certain sources were contradictory in them, and that's why we were never ever able to get the actual concrete facts that we were promised. We were promised videos, audios, we were promised bank transfers, we were promised all kinds of stuff to validate the accusations at the time. And through all the trips that we went down there, we never actually got the black and white proof. And we'll get into that later. But at that time, when we were going there, we were speaking, you have to keep in mind, with the general prosecutor of Ukraine, the ex-general prosecutor of Ukraine, the head of NABU, who was the anti-corruption bureau, chief of staffs to the presidents, talking about the minister of Interior of Akov. I mean, these are the most top four or five people in the country that run it. So when they're talking about and making accusations, you tend to believe it. You think that, you know, the information is true. But when you look back and understand that we had their own personal political agendas at the time in their own country, that they wanted an alliance with the United States, that, you know, the story becomes a little bit more grayer and you start opening up and seeing that it's not exactly the way you see it. So yes, were we getting the information that the information you hear today that Comer, Congressman Comer is out there trying to, you know, impeach Joe Biden. Majority of that information came through me. I know. So I know where that information came from. I know where it is. And that is why I wrote a letter to James Comer and the Oversight Committee telling him that I'm willing to come out there and testify under oath in front of all the millions of people and provide them, which I have already provided them, all the text messages, emails, videos, and pictures, and be able to get the truth out, to be able to, because I agree with you 100%, John. Our country is so divided that it's unheard of, because there's nothing being done. We have no policies that are happening. We're in a total standstill. Two presidents that are going at each other at each other's throats. There's more conversation about going of revenge than actually building our country back. There's two wars that are happening. I mean, it's a total mess, you know, as we see it right now. So yeah, we need unification, because the more division we have, the more mess it's going to become. Until we start getting some unification, we're not going to go anywhere. And that was one of the reasons why I wrote my book. That was one of the reasons why, because I'm not a Republican or Democrat. I've never voted in my life until I voted for Trump and got involved in all that. I was a businessman, never involved in politics, and I didn't get involved with Trump because of politics. I got involved with him because he was a businessman, because of things that I perceived that could better my life, my family, by being around him to be able to make money. And then this whole Ukraine came up, and because of my background, because of my relationship with Trump and Giuliani at the time, and because I had access to people over there that were willing to tell them the same story, it basically turned into a situation that we're still, you know, 4 years later, now talking about now impeaching Joe Biden on something that his son Hunter may or may have not done.
So the story had a little bit of holes in it. I mean, where does that linear process align? You know, it's because it's like you have Trump in office, now you have Biden in office. And when you think about you're dealing with one country, are there two different narratives when our administration, whoever's in office, are there two different narratives that are going on that people are speaking to within that country? All right, there's one side over here in Ukraine. There's another side over here in Ukraine. Now, this president's going to talk to this side and this president's going to talk to this side. Is it a very similar linear process or are you talking to one group?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, just like in our country over there, they have their own political fractions of different, you know, we have a two-party system. They have more than two parties because they have, you know, the Russian party over there that has the Russian vote, and you have the Democratic supposed party, the Republican supposed party, the liberals. So they have a lot of different parties in their system. So they have a lot of different views and opinions. The information we were getting was coming from a very heavy Trump supportive administration that wanted to get into next elections in Ukraine. Like the Yuri Lutsenko, who was the current general prosecutor, he was aware that if Poroshenko would not win, and he didn't, and Zelensky won, he would get fired. So he had the intention of making sure that Poroshenko won and got back into office. Poroshenko had the same interest. And the only way they would be able to have the opportunity to get back into office, because of the way the political landslide was, is whoever got Trump's and America's support, because of the war they were going on with Russia, they needed tremendous support and relationship. And Ukraine, previously to 2016, made a major bet, and they bet it all on Hillary Clinton and made a lot of derogatory comments against Trump at that time. So when all of a sudden Trump won in 2016, they literally had zero relationship. Poroshenko was not allowed nowhere near the White House. And that's where it all started. So it became kind of where certain Ukrainian politicians, because of were willing to sell their soul, willing to do whatever it took to be able to get into Trump's good graces here, to be able to use that for their own political purposes over there. And that's how one side was starting to use the other side to fit the narrative.
We're over here trying to placate a situation based on who we want to be in office in these other countries, basically, is what it amounts to.
Well, I mean, officially, unofficially, yeah. I mean, because a big part of Eastern European countries are built off of corruption, as we call it here in the United States, even though for them it's a way of life and they look at it a lot differently as far as bribes and what corruption and what crimes are considered. But we on the Western side here, especially in the United States, are trying to promote anti-corruption all over the world. So absolutely, by doing that, we're forcing the hand of how presidents and ministers and politicians are in office, because over there you have basically either the corrupt or the old regime, as you would call it, or you have the new, young, up-and-comers that want to spread democracy and or that are, you know, closer to the West and want to move that way. And that's who the U.S. supports. And because of that, of course, I truly believe we get involved in politics all over the world as far as that goes.
You only got so much time in a day. And you talk about two guys going after each other. Then you add to the scenario about trying to worry about who you can help get in office in this country, who you can help get in office in this country. Because I had this rationale. I have a little spiritual. I'm a clairsentient. And I read people and feel things and have Native America on both sides of my family. If each country, thinking you only got so much time in a day, if each country focused on their country and manipulated resources that can help their people within their country, and they could survive, how much better? It's almost like each country finding thyself, right? Just like a person finding thyself. After seeing this scenario, if each country focused on themselves, built resources within, quit worrying about all the other time they waste worrying about everybody else, do you think that might be a better process? That's just out of the blue question.
No, I mean, listen, you know, a lot of people say that, and that's why we have a lot of people in our country that are saying, you know, stop helping Ukraine, stop helping, you know, Israel or whatever, you know, concentrate our own borders, concentrate on our own, you know, bridges and tunnels, and we need our own infrastructure and stop spending money all over the world. Disagree with that, and I'll tell you why, but, you know, I don't disagree for it because I think they're wrong in a way. I mean, that's their opinion, and that's why we live in a beautiful country called the United States. We're all have allowed to have our opinion. You know, as a person that's traveled all over the world since the age of 18, you know, and I'm 51 right now, and I've met countless presidents, and I've met countless oligarchs and billionaires and people that, you know, are celebrities and stars in my life. And I could just tell you, you know, one thing is that there are some very evil people out there that run other countries. And other countries, yes, like, you know, a country like Ukraine, a country like Israel, a country like, you know, any other country out there, you know, gives up. Yeah, they should concentrate on themselves. But a powerful country like the United States that wants to continue to have world order and power, I think they have an obligation to protect us, because yes, we might not feel it today, but if we stop interfering against good and evil, and for like 10, 20 years, what's going to happen is majority of these evil countries, the only reason they've not been able succeededly to expand their evil and take over other countries and succeed in getting bigger, powerful, and a bigger threat to the United States, States is because we've been cutting them off at the knees. It's because we've, you know, I know people, some people disagree with NATO or agree with NATO. Again, I'm not going to go into the politics of it, but it's because of all these little things. It's not one thing that the United States does. It's a lot of things. It's the campaigns. It's the giving money to other countries. It's, you know, if you take a look at it from, you know, today, my eggs are at $10 or my gas is high and, you know, I don't care about Ukraine. I want to be able to feed my kids. I understand those people, and absolutely. But, you know, if you take a look at a more global approach to what's going to happen 20, 30 years from now when your kids are going to have grandkids and or your grandkids, I mean, in what kind of world do we want to live in? I think it's extremely important to keep up the fight against evil and go against these tyrants like Putin, Xi, Kim Jong-un.
You would have to get everybody, every country on board, you know, around the world for that to be successful. So it's interesting to get your point of view. When you mention Putin, I mean, how is he perceived in that part of the world?
Oh, in Eastern Europe?
Yeah.
Depends in which country. I mean, if you're talking about countries that are loyal to Russia or Russian loyal countries, he's perceived as a powerful individual, someone that's feared. Someone that is respected, feared, loved, hated, all in one. The majority of the people support him. He still, even though it's Russia, not the Soviet Union, he still runs Russia like the Soviet Union with the iron fist. And, you know, as you could have seen the, you know, the things that transpired over the past several years with all the killings of people that are close to him, people falling out of windows, people getting poisoned all over the country that, you know, speak up and, you know, stuff like that. So Putin, that's how he's thought of there. Majority of the other world, Eastern Europe and everywhere else, understands he's a dictator, that he's a monster. He's somebody that they fear. They all understand the history back there, and the history states that Putin, from the first day he entered office, basically his destination was to reunite and unite the old Soviet Union back together and make it even more powerful and stronger than it was, and make it a leader in the world. But to do that, he needs to take over, you know, all of these independent countries that are now independent and they're not part of the Soviet Union. Russia doesn't have control over them. And over the past 20 years, he's been trying to do it under the radar diplomatically. By using money all over the world, influencing elections, influencing politics. And he came very close in Ukraine and almost was able to take over Ukraine without firing a single bullet in 2014 when Yanukovych, the president back there that Manafort was working with, was about to sign the agreement with a union with Russia. That's when they had the Maidan. That's when Ukraine had the revolution. That's when they got, you know, Russia was able to take over certain parts of Crimea and other parts of Donbass in Ukraine. And that's when everything basically started over there. So they understand that Putin is a monster, is somebody that's, these are just the first steps. If we allow him and we disregard this, yes, he will take over Ukraine. And next he will go after Poland. And next he will push the red line. And that red line is going to be attacking a NATO country. And what are we going to do? I know the United States and all these countries talk a big game. Oh, God forbid. You know, NATO this, NATO that, but nobody wants a nuclear war. Just because you're going to attack a NATO, I mean, you're going to start diplomacy. I mean, you're going to push that red line. And evil people like dictators like Putin know that. They know that they have the upper hand on democracy, on good, because good is not willing to go to the extreme of threat, and bad is. And that's where we are right now. And I think that we have, as a world and as the United States, we have an incredible opportunity to be able to fight this evil without using our own kids, our own people, our own soldiers, by just spending a little bit of money and supporting a group, a country there that's willing to fight, not just on behalf of their own democracy and their own freedom, but a tyrant, and stop a tyrant, be able to expand into the rest of the world. So that's my opinion on that.
I think about that sometimes, and I don't know what the answer is, but when you think about historical bloodline and you look at history, you know, say in the past 500 years, 1,000 years in that part of the world, you know, you think, is someone like Putin really trying to figure out the historical bloodline, or is it just ego?
Oh, it's totally ego. I mean, it's money, power, ego. I've been around a lot of people close to Putin himself, very close. It's a narcissism. majority of these people have a huge narcissistical problem. It's all about power, money, and strength.
So when you think about manipulation, where in this whole narrative, you know, get sticky for you and ended you up in jail?
What happened with me is, if you recall, right before the impeachment, the first impeachment of Trump, there was a whistleblower complaint that came out. The whistleblower that nobody knew who he was came out, complained, talking about Giuliani's escapades in Ukraine and digging up dirt on Joe Biden. And that's when I was named in the whistleblower complaint for the first time. At that point, I was basically subpoenaed by the House Impeachment Committee, at which point Trump gave me one of his lawyers, John Dowd, to represent me. I write deeply in the book about what transpired and what took place with meetings and what we agreed or didn't agree upon. But the mass majority was that they were going to stonewall. We were not going to testify, and Trump was not going to provide any information, and we were going to just basically use it as call it a sham impeachment. While I was in Washington, D.C., and this was in October, first week of October, I received a phone call from one of our sources, an oligarch overseas in Vienna, telling us that he was able to contact somebody from Burisma, an ex-CFO, and he was going to bring over the hard drive and also give us information, basically, to validate some of the stories that we heard about Joe and Hunter Biden. The plan was me, Giuliani, and Victoria Tunzing were to fly over there. What's his name? From Fox News, Hannity was going to do the interview from Vienna, where they got the studio, Fox ready and everything. The day we were supposed to fly, Giuliani said that he had to go to the White House and he couldn't fly with us on that flight.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Victoria Tunning said that her husband Joe got sick and she has to look after him. For us to go there to set everything up, this was a Thursday, the interview and every meeting was supposed to take care of like on a Monday, and Giuliani said he would come there over the weekend for us to go there, set everything up in the meantime, and he would go there. And that's when we went to the airport, and we were arrested for all kinds of charges.
So your two comrades didn't go with you, and then you got arrested at the airport. What was going through your mind?
At that moment?
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, at that moment, I was like kind of like laughing, because you got to understand, I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. I was not like selling drugs or doing any criminal activity where I was worried that I might get arrested for something one day. I'm a mission from the President of the United States. So at the time, I also was very deep in the mega cult environment, believing about the deep state, the FBI, and everybody trying to go after Trump and, you know, stuff like that. When we first got arrested, I was obviously scared, confused, not understanding, but I was very defiant and still headstrong, thinking that basically the cavalry is going to come there in the next hour, 2 hours, Giuliani, Trump, whatever, somebody's going to make a phone call. I mean, I'm an extremely important guy to the administration for to be, you know, held on whatever phony charges they're trying to make up, because I didn't even know what I was being arrested or held for. I was never read any Miranda rights or told about anything. It was just basically they told me nobody's going to want to speak to you, you know, and threw me in a cell until arraignment time. I didn't think anything at that moment, but a lot of things started happening after my arrest that started opening up my eyes and understanding that I'm starting to be the fall guy, and that things are not just coincidental. Like, for instance, Rudy Giuliani, having my son in his room for 2 days, basically, while I was first arrested, and my son overhearing, you know, a conversation between him and Jay Sekulow on speaker, where they're telling him the White House wants you to distance yourself from him. time and start changing the narrative to the fact that Rudy's never showed up to any of my hearings, wouldn't meet with my wife. But the thing that really, I think, broke the camel's back was after I fired John Dowd and Downing inside of my prison cell. And I was laying there in solitary confinement. They called it the Manafort wing because that's where Paul Manafort spent a year in prison. I was in the same cell. And I was laying there, and all of a sudden underneath, and you have to imagine, I mean, I'm in solitary confinement. I have a bar of soap, nothing else. I'm not even allowed a pen or paper to write. And all of a sudden I get 2-3 in the morning, there's something slipped under my door. It's a postcard from the White House. And it's from Rudy Giuliani, basically calming me down, telling me things are going to be all right. But don't worry, Paul, Matt, I got some of the best lawyers. Paul Manafort only got 7.5 years. At that point, I understood the message very strong, alongside with Trump saying that he didn't know who I was, that them not showing up to my arraignment, them not being on the plane with me when we got arrested. I started understanding. And then later on, when information came out that Bill Barr traveled to Southern District of New York the very first time, and it was because the day we were supposed to get arrested, after the meeting at Southern District, then he went meet up with Rupert Murdoch for dinner. I mean, you know, the chain goes on and on, and I write about all that in my book. Certain people want me to keep my mouth shut. What's the best way to do that is when you get arrested, you have to plead, say that you're fifth, because you don't want to incriminate yourself in a criminal trial. That's what happened to the arrest.
You feel like you're the fall guy. You become the fall guy. What were they getting out of the situation if you were the fall guy? You know what I'm saying? What was the purpose?
In Trump world, there's always two sides. I mean, there's people that are loyal to Trump and that do what Trump wants and go along with that. And then there are people in Trump's administration and Trump around Trump that think they could change him, think they could control him, think they could do him differently. And that's what happened in his whole administration. That's why you saw so many people get fired, so many people changed, new chief of staffs, new generals, I mean, you name it. It was like ring around the rosy when it came to that.
You know, I'm thinking, what advantage did they get of it?
Trump did not want me arrested. Giuliani did not want me arrested. Part of doing it for him to be able to get this information. But there were people in Trump's orbit that were against that, like Bill Barr, like Pompeo, like John Bolton. Bill Barr in particular was following the investigation. He was, from the day he was sworn in, he was told about me, Rudy Giuliani, because, we were so close to Trump. Bill Barr never liked Rudy Giuliani. He was against this whole Ukraine stuff. He was against this whole bringing up the stuff. He thought it was going to bring Trump down. And he was one of those people that was not on Team Trump, but thought that he could do whatever, he wants and help Trump without Trump even knowing that he needed the help. So he decided the best way to shut this thing up is to arrest a couple of guys that are, that don't have the pedigree, that don't have the credibility, that the media can easily destroy, make them look out like they are, Russian assets or whatever the case, indict them on 6-7 federal charges so they'll be looking at 20-30 years, make their life a miserable hell that they now gotta spend all their money on lawyers and attorneys. And why would they want to now go up and speak in front of Congress and get involved in anything when they're fighting for their life? It's a good way to shut somebody up. So, and it was interesting that it happened the day we were going to meet up with the CFO and of Burisma and to get information about, the Bidens and supposed, the hard drive and stuff like that. Unless you believe in coincidences, which I don't, the way everything transpired, because, even if you take a look at later on how everything happened, it's, Bill Barr came out and everybody saw the true Bill Barr, who he was for himself. And, now he's running around talking about how Trump should go to jail, and this is the guy that's protecting him, from the Mueller report to the Ukraine investigation, shutting down prosecutors. I mean,
I don't know how you defend against that, because if you have two, let's say you have two opponents going at each other, and then you have an internal conflict that you have no control over, when do you really have time to govern if you're just running around covering up shit all the time?
Well, you don't. And that's why we're here. I mean, that's why in America we have no policies being done. That's why we're in a total standstill, because we're talking about the top. But you can't even imagine what's going on lower levels in Congress and Senate. I mean, people are literally almost fist fighting in these events. I mean, we've gotten to a point in our country where when we used to watch how things happen overseas and there'd be a fight in Congress where we'd laugh at it and say, look at it, look at how crazy they are over there. But now it's happening here in the halls of Congress. I mean, we have people who want to walk around with guns and inside of Congress. We have people that want to put pornography. I mean, we want people that want to talk about, you know, changing sexual. I mean, we got so much crazy stuff, but nothing to do with, you know, how to save our economy, help build our infrastructure, protect our borders. You know what I mean? Things that are, you know, schools. I mean, things that are important, healthcare. That I feel like we're on Jerry Springer. Every day I wake up and you put on the TV, I feel it's the next episode. What's happening today? It's unheard of.
Do you feel like these administrations really have the power that's perceived to the people?
I mean, yes and no. Let me put it to you this way. I think majority of people are under the assumption that just because you're president, for instance, like when Trump was president, he needed to fire the U.S. ambassador of Ukraine. He had to have her fired by Secretary Pompeo because it was his job as a Secretary of State. So he had to give him the order. He couldn't, you know, I mean, he could, but it wasn't policy just to call up the ambassador and fire her. You know what I'm saying to you? Same thing here. Like, can the president put pressure on the attorney general to do certain things and use that office of the attorney general to prosecute? Of course he could. It depends on the relationship between them, because we're all people. See, we all sit there and think that, you know, just because you're a president or you're a judge or because you're a congressman, you're a senator, you've all of a sudden, you know, God's come down on you and hit you with the magic wand where you're all of a sudden not a human being, and everything that you've done in your past and how you've grown up and everything that doesn't matter now. All your opinions, now you're supposed to serve the people. That doesn't happen. We're all human beings. People get into office and they start getting power, and they use that power to push the agendas that they feel and that they want to achieve. And some of them use it for corruption. Some of them use it for power. And that's where we're at.
And how's your relationship now with Trump and Rudy?
Oh, I have no relationship. Never want to see them again. I mean, except for when, you know, at trial, I am going to go to his trial and Rudy's trial. Something they didn't do for me, I'm going to do for them. And I'm going to go sit there front row and watch them eye to eye as karma, as they say, is a bitch.
You know, you wrote the book, and tell us the name of the book.
Shadow Diplomacy.
Shadow Diplomacy. And what is your goal releasing this book?
My goal to releasing the book is to get the truth out. Basically, there was a lot of things that transpired in those 4 years, the way the media cycle moves so quickly because of things that happen. There's so many things going on. People really don't know certain things that transpire. A lot of things that happened in Ukraine, a lot of things that transpired with Venezuela behind the scenes, Turkey, and certain other things that I was privy to, that I was around, including certain lobbyists, including certain, you know, different politicians like Kevin McCarthy and Congressman Pete Sessions, and things that they were up to, Lindsey Graham and stuff like that. When I try to get the truth out in interviews and stuff like that, it's very difficult because it's very difficult to get everything out in one interview or one podcast or one, you know, taping. So I decided to write the book. The Republicans decided to continue this impeachment and spread a lot of disinformation about things that I was privy to and I was a part of. I wanted to make sure that I get everything in the book that transpired, text messages and pictures and everything, to validate too. So there's no doubt about exactly what happened, because after Comer did not want to have me testify in front of Congress, I started seeing that they're going to try to bury the truth and just come out with a certain version of it to the people. So my goal is to get the book out there, so everybody, no matter what happens in this impeachment, no matter what happens, which witnesses get hurt or not get hurt, the true story about what happened in Ukraine with Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, the laptop, quid pro quos, because you have to remember, I was the guy that Trump told to tell President Zelensky that they're not going to get military aid before he withheld military aid, that Vice President Pence was not going to come to the inauguration before they canceled going to the inauguration. So there's a lot to it, you know, and I was the guy on the ground. I was the guy that was being told and relaying the messages, translating the conversations. I have all the proof and the receipts to do it, and I want to make sure that it doesn't get buried, hidden, and the whole truth gets out, no matter what happens with this impeachment, and no matter what happens with what witnesses do or do not get called.
I mean, do you think the internal conflicts kind of took the power out of Rudy and Trump's hands? There was really nothing they could do?
Well, yeah, I mean,
of course. When it comes to your situation?
My situation's no. You know Trump now. I mean, even people that don't know him but see the way that he doesn't care about this one or that one things. If he feels strongly about something, he'll state it, he'll do it. And but that's one thing that people don't realize, that the biggest false pretense about Trump, loyalty, where, you know, he runs on loyalty. Yes, he expects loyalty. He expects loyalty from everybody, and that's the first thing that he expects before you could even go forward. But the problem is he doesn't give that loyalty back. You know, it's always a false pretense. pretense. He makes you feel it's like the, you know, hanging the, dangling the carrot in front of you. You chase that loyalty thinking you have it, thinking that if anything ever happened, you know, you have it. And then when something does happen, as we've seen time and time over again, the first thing he does is he says he doesn't know who you are, or you might have been an errand boy, you might have been a coffee boy, you're not really a lawyer, even though you got thousands of pictures and videos and private recordings, you know.
What fixes the system? Do we know?
I think we need to get rid of everybody. Clean slate. We need to get some fresh, younger candidates for president, you know, with newer ideas, fresher starts, moving forward, and get that history of, you know, it's like, I feel like we're stuck in a Rocky movie. We're Rocky 3 now, Rocky, you know, it's like, you know, Trump against Biden. I mean, it's already, we're going on to year 6. I mean, we need to move on. We need to clean up and get a fresh start, because as long as Trump, Biden, this goes on, we're stuck in like the Twilight Zone, because Trump's mega base is as powerful as anybody's ever had. I mean, he has millions and tens of millions of supporters that will basically, if he were to tell them tomorrow to everybody get up and move to a different country, they probably would. You know, I mean, that's how strong belief into Trump is. And then you have a very strong, powerful, common sense, middle and conservative, and then certain left. And I don't talk about the far left, because I consider anything far left or far right off the rockers. I'm a moderate guy. I think you need to have common sense, be towards the middle. I even though I lean a little bit more towards conservative, you know what I'm saying to you, but I believe, like you said, that I'd rather have the smartest 5 guys in the room and 2 Republicans and 2 Democrats and get all the visions and get unification instead of division. Right now, until we, you know, as they say, until you cut out the cancer fully, till we forget this era, I mean, and there's nothing you could do. Just think about the hatred that people, normal people, I mean, you have families that can't have Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner because they don't agree on politics, because of, one's on Trump side and one is on Biden's side. So just think about the hatred that's going on in our halls of Congress, our Senate, our judicial system, our DOJ. When they say the DOJ is weaponized, you got to think about it. You have thousands, tens of thousands of people with guns and the right with their own brains to now think about and believe in what side they want to be on. Mm-hmm. So if they're hardcore Republican and all of a sudden you are a left wing guy that doesn't believe in it and you pop out on his radar, trust me when I tell you, yeah, he's not supposed to do it, but I believe me more or not that he's going to go after you a lot quicker than he's going to go after somebody that believes in the same value. That's where we've gotten to. And then you see it all the way down to your sheriffs, police stations, your local school districts. It's become what side you're on. You have to pick what side you're on to pick what school your kids are going to go to. Because if you choose a private school and you're a Democrat and you choose a more conservative private school, your kids cannot go there, and vice versa. So it's like politics have taken over our whole world. I mean, you go sit at which restaurant you're going to go to. You go into the wrong restaurant where it's primarily, you know, liberal and you're a conservative, they're going to eat you up alive. You will be scared to order. You don't know if the waitress or the waiter is going to spit in your food. I mean, it's crazy.
You know what that tells me? I bet you all those people say they're spiritual or whatever, but, you know, I think it's finding thyself, you know, because, you know, long time ago, you know, guy I worked for, he says, never make a decision on emotions. And I think we're a country of making decisions in the middle. We're not getting the answers from the foundation. So we're operating in the middle. And then the emotions are making the decisions. So it makes a very, very hollow person across the board. And I think people really need to think about that, about finding themselves, quit worrying about everybody else, take the ego out of it, do what's right or wrong, and move forward. Because this, to me, I don't know if I'm awake or whatever you call it spiritually, is crazy to me that we can't see that, because we're raising a generation that does see that. What does that generation think?
I have 6 kids, I understand, and, you know, and they're different ages. I have a 24-year-old that's the Gen Z, and, you know, I have younger, so it's difficult to think of how screwed up of a situation we are, because you got to think of not only are politics involved, but now you have religion involved with this whole war that happened between Israel, with the attack of Hamas on Israel and Israel's response. Then you have the war that's going on in Ukraine that, you know, has a lot of, because of what's going on in our political world here, and because it's Ukraine and Russia and again part of the whole system, that has a lot of division. So you have three very crazy topics that are dividing our country. And the interesting part that, John, that I've been noticing, I know I go on a lot of social media, Twitter, we do these spaces, and it's interesting to see how when we would do the political spaces, how there is people I would agree or disagree with on the political sphere that now bury that because we agree on what's happening in Israel and vice versa. And it's crazy to see how the shift it keeps moving because of what's happening on. But what it tells me is that if we're able, because when we were arguing in those political debates for Trump, against Trump, they were so passionate, they were so hard. And if we were able to bury those and become friends and be on the same side because of now, let's say, the Israel conflict, what it shows me is that we can forgive and forget. We can move on, bury. That means there is hope out there that we can somehow unite. We just have to find that common denominator, like you said, whatever that is, to unite our country back, for us to be on the same side, whatever that is, for us to be together, strong, and all for one. And when that happens, I think then will start to heal.
And the last question before we get off here, I mean, when you met Trump for the first time, how is he in person?
Oh, I mean, he's charismatic. He gives you that power, that aura. I mean, like, you gotta understand, I'm a guy that grew up in the streets of Brooklyn, New York, where my father passed away when I was very young. So I always clung to powerful men, you know, that, you know, from different mobsters to politicians to eventually Trump. So to me, it was, you know, he relayed of that person that I, as a young person, wanted to be rich, powerful, have whatever he wants, the beautiful cars, the women, the, you know. So, and when he speaks to you, he portrays that. You got to also understand he's a showman. So everything is choreographed, kind of. The way he enters, the way what's happening, everything, the next steps. So it's all kind of played into giving him that persona, that personality.
I mean, he had a pretty good show. Yeah. On a couple of...
That's what he did.
You know what I mean? So where can we find the book, Lev?
You could go to my website, levremembers.com, or you could follow me at Lev Parnas at Twitter and Instagram. I think you definitely will enjoy it, because it doesn't matter what side you're on, because I'm not on one side or the other. I'm on the side of the truth and democracy and unification and getting our country back together. And, you know, I don't want war. I want love. I want peace, even though I do understand that sometimes there's costs that are involved and sometimes they're not pleasant. So I'm not, you know, completely out there and don't understand that. So I truly believe that it doesn't matter what side you are, you will enjoy it. You will get an inside look, and it'll give you a better of understanding of the decision that you can make of who your next president or who your next going to be. And that's not to say Trump or not Trump, but I just want to give the viewers an inside look of what transpired, an understanding. And the final thing I'll leave you with that is, when you read the book, you'll understand the power that Trump gave me. And I was, what you didn't know is I was literally your Secretary of State at that time.
Uh-huh.
I think it's important for people to really understand, and not just what Trump was about, but all the people around him, the inner circle and everything else, you know, that's going on, that is currently still in our media cycle today.
I've always said too that, you know, when they get involved in these scenarios, as many lawyers as they have on either side, a lot of this shit's got to be predetermined. You know what I'm saying? If not, I mean, what are they standing on? You know?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of behind the scenes backdoor activity that majority of the people don't understand about. And we envision, because I was one of those people before I came on the inside. When I was on the outside, I had a totally different understanding or impression of how our country ran, how things happened, how the chain of command went, what can or cannot be done. And I think it was more of what American public thinks of. But once you read the book, you'll get an inside look and really understand how certain things transpired and happened. And you'll be able to relate to the news media stories that you've read and you saw and you watched the television, and now get behind the scenes look at exactly what happened. And because what we saw was just a glimpse of it, and we saw the outer layer of it. The public never got a chance, because the witnesses were never allowed to be called. And because of that, I was blocked to be called. So, and now they don't want want to call me and Giuliani. I mean, just think about it, John. Who would be the number one best witnesses you would think about for the Republicans to get up there ready is Rudy Giuliani and me. Because we were the guys mm-hmm. that did all this stuff. We're the guys, you're using all of the information. They won't call us. Not only won't they call us, they're blocking. They're trying to block for us. Why? Why wouldn't you want us to testify under oath? So read all the book. You'll understand what I'm talking about.
One little thing is just intriguing about Biden. If you look at Trump, you look at Biden. And Biden been in politics as long as he has. How much dilution is there?
We need fresh start. We need our country needs a fresh start. We the people need a fresh start. The world needs a fresh start. We need to get rid of some of this old ideology on both sides, and we need to start moving forward and thinking about, you know, healing a little bit, because, you know, if we go on longer like this, it could get a lot worse before it gets better, you know, especially with the election. I mean, just think about it. President that's running for the guy that's going to be running for president of the United States is under 4 indictments, 91 charges. Right or wrong, I'm just saying to you, just the fact that that's happening in the United States of America, just think about for how long we're going to have to deal and with that over the around the world to regain back our power. Powers the United States had, like we started in the beginning talking about how we meddle in other elections. One of the things how we do that is by making sure we go to all of these third world countries and try to moderate their elections to mm-hmm. make sure they have a true and honest election. If anybody looks at the United States, nobody could trust our elections. Our elections are all, you know, the narrative here, it doesn't matter what side you're on. It's all, you know, it's our elections are fake, they're false, and this. So now how can we be the leader in the world by trying to tell a country, a third world country, like how to run their elections? I mean, it's a joke. I mean, mm-hmm. the things that are going on right now and the ramifications of things that are happening internally, most citizens don't even know and don't understand because it's not a part of it. It's like some people say, like, why should I care? If I live in Texas and, you know, why should I care about Ukraine? And I care about, you know, making sure, you know, I could go fishing with my kids. And like, why do I care about them? I mean, it's true. I mean, because if you live in a sheltered environment, you shouldn't care. You don't know. But what's going to happen 20, 30 years from now if all of a sudden Russia becomes Ukraine, becomes the Soviet Union, takes over all these countries, become a massive powerhouse, and then turns around and puts nuclear weapons outside of Cuba, outside of mm-hmm. Florida? And then you're going to care. Then mm-hmm. you're going to care when your kids are going to get drafted in, and then your grandkids, and you're going to sit back and say, how did we get here? I understand a lot of people don't get involved in politics. So I was one of those people that never mm-hmm. got involved in politics for 46 years. But what I've learned in the past 4 years is we need to be involved. We need to be involved who we elect for our representatives, because it matters, because their mistakes, we live with them.
Well, I go back to the spiritual thing and the Native American thing. When Native Americans made decisions, they made decisions for their fifth, sixth, seven generations. We're making decisions for the next 5 minutes. And it ain't working.
Exactly.
It ain't working.
You hit it on the dot, John. You know, it's like we're like, you know, the cyclone's coming and it's going to be over. So let's enjoy ourselves. So forget everything else. Let's have a barbecue. And I agree with you. I mean, I truly do believe that, like I said, because of seeing the interaction, because I interact with everybody. I don't care if you're a Trump supporter, you're a Biden supporter. I'm out there to tell the truth, tell my story. And, you know, and that's about it. I don't talk about subjects that I don't know about. But I see a lot of people that, I mean, like crazy division, I'd never speak to again because of the craziness we would talk about in politics. And then, you know, Israel happened and it brought us on spaces back together. And now we're good friends and there's hope.
Well, Lev, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I think you're a very passionate guy. This has been Lev Parnas, and I am John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Production. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.